Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
We have another legend for you right now, though. One Mr. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Those of you who have ever gone to see Kevin, if you wonder why he tugs on his earlobe at the end of an examination, that would explain why, taking the inspiration from Carol Burnett, who ends all of her broadcasts that way. Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Good morning, Dean. Well, 45 degrees and raining on a Sunday, I guess I'm still okay.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, we were just spoiled the last few days, that's all. But,
So was the tug on the ear, was that a saying hello to somebody? Was that a message
that
to someone?
That was a message to Carol Burnett when she was first starting in show business. She would tug on her ear at the end of every show as a sign to her grandmother that everything was okay.
That's cool.
Her grandmother who raised her, and then it just became tradition, you know, and she still does it at the end of every performance, everything that she does. She gives a little tug on the old ear. And can you believe that Carol Burnett, she seems so timeless to me, is about to turn 90 years old and still hilariously funny. Yeah, isn't that amazing? I mean, right, it really is quite amazing, isn't it? I mean, and I'll give all the credit in the world to medical science of how we look at 90-year-olds today is quite different than we did 20, 30 years ago. People can still be very vibrant at the age of 90 and above.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my mother will be 91 here in a month and still living alone, sharper than sharp, probably more on top of things than I am. Still drives, so absolutely. So people like Carol Burnett, when you have good genes like that, you take good care of your body, you can still have not only a good quantity of life, but a great quality of life,
right,
as well.
Yeah, often that's those two things don't go hand in hand. So I wanted to ask you, because the weather has been so nice, I was talking about how I grilled out the last several nights. Are there any dangers in health-wise in grilling out? I've heard people say, you know, that sometimes you get, the fumes from charcoal, the gas fumes, not good on things that you may be grilling. Is there any truth to any of that, or is it perfectly safe to be grilling outside?
Oh, no, it's perfectly safe. I mean, a couple things. One, as far as what you're inhaling, really you're outside, the air circulation, it dilutes that very, very quickly. So anytime you get smoke, obviously, it's going to irritate you a little bit, but not in this quantity is it going to cause any problems. Certainly, probably one of the cleaner ways to cook is obviously with gas, but certainly charcoal has still been used very highly with no side effects whatsoever and no concerns from a health view.
Some people have said that because some charcoal briquettes are made, with fibrous material. It's not just charcoal. It's fibrous materials. There's some chemical compounds in there to hold it all together, that the burning of all of that, the fumes going on your food, is not healthful. You don't have any concerns about that?
I don't. I'll tell you one thing, just for the barbecue people out there, this is a bigger concern that we have right now, is the wire brushes that you use to clean your grill. Mm. Those little specks of wire sometimes get stuck to the grill, then they get stuck to the food, and then they're ingested. And we've had numerous cases where that wire has actually punctured through the intestine and has caused a problem. So really watch that's probably the biggest health effect or the biggest health concern we have right now with grilling, is those wire brushes and what they can do to your intestines.
Yeah, probably. You know, they sell, the wooden scrapers for the grills that probably would wind up being safer. They have some that are sort of, I guess, like a plastic something, you know, that resists obviously high temperatures, much better than the bristly metal things that a lot of us are using.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a combination of how you make sure that that's clean as well, but then also make sure that you're cooking appropriately, that you're hitting temperatures, especially with chicken. Chicken on the grill, the outside may look done, but the inside may not. high cases of salmonella with undercooked chicken.
Right.
So certainly make sure that your chicken is fully cooked if you're going to cook it on the grill.
Yeah, I've become a huge fan of the internal thermometer. You know, that you put the probe in the food or the thermometer in the food. You can instantly read what's going on, not outside, but inside, to test the doneness of whatever it is you're cooking. I mean, if you're doing a steak, you can exactly know, you know, when to take it off so it's medium or medium rare or well done, whatever your preference. But you have to hit definitely a minimum temperature with chicken. Otherwise, it can definitely cause you some health issues. So I cannot recommend those enough.
Chicken and pork are probably the biggest ones that we get concerned about from an infectious disease point of view as far as undercooked meats. But yeah, like you said, those screening tools are available. You can get them on Amazon. They're very easy to use and very accurate, and that'll keep your family safe.
Yeah. You know what? Somebody on our text line here from the 224 area code says, I use crumpled up aluminum foil to clean the grill off. That's a really good idea.
Does it
seem like a good idea to you, too? Yeah, I think
yeah.
Yeah, and you know, not all that expensive either. So I just learned about ChatGPT this week, and what it is, and you know, I guess all the kids that are, you know, more computer savvy than me have known about ChatGPT, where you put in questions. And it can write an essay for you. It really, to me, it replaces thinking. And the computers are able to come up with long essay-like answers to questions that you have. So if you're a student and taking tests, it's basically doing your homework for you. But now this ChatGPT is having an effect on the medical field as well, right?
Yeah, Dean, it's amazing. When you look at this, ChatGPT came out in November of last year. So not that long ago, very short period of time. Last week, it was just shared with us that ChatGPT had not only passed the licensing exam, it had passed the board exam, wow, and had done extremely well in the MCAT exam.
Wow.
So when you look at that, it's like, holy cow, where are we going with this? But certainly in the world of medicine, we will have some great uses for it. That it's a little bit over at ski tips right now, but for this only being, you know, 6 months old, it's amazing how far it's gotten in this period of time.
Yeah, I think it's kind of scary, to tell you the truth. That, I mean, you know, we always have, you know, talked about and, you know, somewhat joked that computers are taking over the world. This literally could take over the world. And, you know, who would be comfortable with a doctor who, you know, went through all of the examinations that they have to go through with the computer doing all of the thinking for the person? And in some cases, even, you know, criticizing you and downplaying you. I mean, it is literally a computer program that does the work of a human being, which I'm personally a little uncomfortable with.
Oh, yeah. No, we all are. And, you know, one of the things with even just the internet and, you know, over the impact it's had over the past 10, 15, 20 years, you know, many people come into their doctor's office already having gone on to Dr. Google to know exactly what they have. Well, this is Dr. Google on steroids. So we have to understand that patients are going to use this. The side that they don't understand is that doctors put a whole bunch of information together. And not only that, the ethics, the compassion, the communication that doctors learn as to how to give bad news, how to give good news, how to promote, how to encourage, that can't be read off a piece of paper. But certainly there probably will be some areas of ChatGPT that actually save the doctor documentation time, which will allow them to have more face time with patients, which is something patients have been asking for years.
I guess it's just a matter of finding, you know, where is the right point for this? You know, where is it helpful? When is it intrusive? You know, again, to me, it just seems like, you know, maybe you're going to lose your job because some company is going to bring in ChatGPT to replace you. You know, it seems like there are as many downsides as up to this, but very interesting that it's beginning to have an effect now on the medical world. I'll tell you what ChatGPT can't do is answer your questions that you have for Dr. Kevin Most. You can call in 312-981-7200, or you can text in your question. When we come back from the break, Dr. Most answers them all. And it's 9:51. This is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. No COVID issues, really, to discuss this week, right? I mean, this is the first week in a very long time when there are really no issues to discuss at all, I don't think.
Yeah, Dean, well, it's interesting. You know, we spoke last week about the Arcturus, you know, the new variant that is really surging, and it's surging really across the country and across the world. Probably will be the dominant strain soon, and probably the most interesting thing that came out is that one of the big side effects or one of the big symptoms of this is red, itchy eyes. So individuals who think that their red, itchy eyes are from allergies at this time of the year really should be tested for COVID to make sure that it's not this strain. But that's probably the biggest, newest thing on the horizon right now.
The 847 area code says that I had COVID. I am asymptomatic after 1 week, but I keep testing positive. Am I still contagious?
No, you're not contagious anymore because you're asymptomatic. However, you can continue to test positive. And we've told this before, you know, 3 years now, that some people can test positive for up to a month later, when in fact they're not shedding the virus and they're not contagious and they're not causing symptoms. But unfortunately, there still is some remnant of that virus in the body so that you're still testing positive. But if you're asymptomatic, you're 10 days post, you are fine as far as contagiousness.
847 area code. Question for Dr. Most. Is it safe to have a CT scan if you've got an artificial hip?
Absolutely. So people think about imaging, and we think about two major kinds of imaging, CAT scans and MRIs. So CAT scans are very high radiation, but very fast. MRIs, where we're using magnetic resonance. Now, the bad thing about CTs and hips and CTs and knees is depending on what area they're looking for, because it'll kind of break up the picture. But certainly is safe, especially if they're doing a CT of your head or your chest. And it's very rare when they do a CT of the hip, especially someone with an artificial hip. But yes, it is safe. And two, the images in some areas may be distorted a little bit, but I assure you that if they're ordering a CT knowing you have a hip, the distortion is not going to be anywhere near the concerned area that they're scanning.
When would they choose to use a CT scan as opposed to an MRI, as opposed to a good old-fashioned X-ray?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Dean, because as we start to look at this, and I'll tell you, if people haven't seen what an MRI can do, it shows the anatomic, you know, down to the individual arteries and individual tendons. So really a lot of musculoskeletal issues. If someone's going to be looking at your knee or an elbow, often they'll do an MRI for that because they really want to see into that joint space and how much is there. Very common for the backs. CT, on the other hand, can be used for many things, and including what we call PET CTs, where we're actually looking at the activity of the cells. So we might be looking for cancer. We may be looking for other illnesses where there's high activity, high cellular activity, which can be picked up by the CT scan. So really, a lot of people will start with a CT scan for some abnormalities, and the doctor will say, you know what, we really need to do an MRI to see more anatomically what's going on versus functionally.
Why wouldn't you just go right to the MRI, right to the gold standard? Is there some risk in that you don't want to do it unless you absolutely feel it's necessary?
Oh, no. And believe me, they both have different uses. So it depends really what I am concerned about and what I am looking for. So, you know, although we look at it and say, gosh, the MRI now has gotten so good from an anatomical point of view, that may not be what I'm looking for. I may be looking for activity in a normal area. So really, it really depends on what the reason is for the test And sometimes just a simple chest X-ray. If I'm looking for pneumonia, I don't need to do a $5,000 CT to diagnose pneumonia. I could do that with a $100 chest X-ray.
Dean, please ask the doctor what he thinks about stem cell therapy for arthritic joints.
Well, it's very interesting. You know, stem cell therapy has really gone crazy. Now, when you talk about arthritis, we have to remember that there's many different kinds of arthritis. You know, something as simple as osteoarthritis. As we age, we wear down those cushions to get to where we're bone on bone. Will stem cell help with that? No, it's not. What stem cell is going to do is the body decides for some reason that it sees something foreign with its rheumatoid arthritis or many other arthritises that are kind of unclear as to the cause. So it sees that as being foreign, so it attacks its own joint. So certainly, depending on how debilitating it is, stem cell is certainly going to be one of those where it turns that portion of it off to say, hey, this is a normal joint. Stop attacking me. So individuals who juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, you've seen these young kids, that body's immune system has said, hey, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to attack it, when in fact it's totally normal tissue. So certainly a portion of patients, that is something to discuss with your physician. But if you're older and you have arthritis due to just old age and wearing down of your bones, it's not because the immune system is fighting that joint. It's because you've worn those cushions that are naturally there, and you just wore them out.
Yeah, exactly. Dr. Kevin Most is the chief medical officer at Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. Always a pleasure to have you on. I hope you have a great Sunday today, Kev. Thanks.
You got it, Dean. We'll talk soon.